Hello, my name's Christian Jones.
And I'm Chanel Suku.
As I'm sure you're aware, today marks a year since Russian forces invaded Ukraine.
We've been taking a look back at the events which led to this moment.
This programme contains content that some people may find upsetting. If you'd rather listen to something else, please head to manxradio.com and navigate to our podcasts.
Because our worst fears have now come true, and all our warnings have proved tragically accurate.
These are dramatic and dangerous times for Ukraine, for its neighbors, and for many countries around the world.
Fastamai, good evening. Dobre vechir. Today marks a year since President Vladimir Putin unleashed a full-scale invasion on Ukraine.
Over the next half hour, we share stories of people from the island that have been instrumental in sending aid in the form of food, clothing, generators, military aid and vehicles.
We also chat to Manx residents that left the war-torn country hours before violence started, as well as a couple from Ukraine who fled to the Isle of Man through government schemes.
Over the past 12 months, it hasn't only been residents extending a helping hand, but also government. The island's landmarks turned yellow and blue, the colours of the Ukrainian flag, to show our solidarity and support. The Council of Ministers have also vowed to do everything it can to support people affected by the war.
Candlelit vigils and prayer sessions have been held. Russian-owned aircrafts, yachts and super yachts have been deregistered from Manx airspace and ports. Displaced animals have been brought over and 125 people have been granted permission to seek refuge here, although the actual number of Ukrainians that have successfully made the journey is unknown.
Carolina Davison is a Ukrainian citizen living on the Isle of Man. Since the beginning, she's been instrumental in raising awareness about the violence and how people could help.
I was woken up by my friend's phone call and she was panicking because she said they have done it. Although we didn't think that it's going to happen, we weren't entirely surprised.
Here on the island, you were one of the first people on social media saying, we need to help, we need to do something. Where did that come from?
I'm Ukrainian, you see, so I couldn't not do anything. I didn't even know where to start, what to do, but the first thing we could do is actually talk about it.
Seeing the scenes that you were seeing, knowing people there, were you trying to, was it like a frantic thing of trying to get in touch with family and friends, make sure they were fine?
It was a shock. You know, we were frightened because the first thing, you know, you contact your relatives, your family, your friends and ask how they were. And when the first missile started hitting and we see the first destructions and first civilians getting killed, that's when I realized that it's actually getting serious and it's getting out of hand. When you call your parents, your friends, and you can't get through, that's when the panic kicks in. There were numerous occasions when I was on the phone to my family and they had, well, you know, I have to go because we have to actually go in a shelter because the siren's going on. You know, the panic sets in and I was really, really frightened for them and their safety.
During this time now here on the island, once you were becoming vocal and posting about it, did you get that support?
Absolutely. People came from everywhere and people supported any way they can, whether it's a kind word. I was receiving flowers, nice words, postcards, money, you know, people asking what they can do to help. And that's when we realized we have to put some group together to maybe coordinate our efforts.
A year later, did you think the war would still be going on?
I was hoping it wouldn't, but here we are a year later and it looks grim and we've all seen the scale of devastation. Totally heartbreaking. There's no words to describe how much suffering this war has brought, but the only thing we can do is keep fighting, believe, help, fight any way we can.
I'm sure the past year for you has been full of emotions. How do you process?
You know, it's a very good one. I actually had to learn how to do it because I couldn't cope to begin with. It was so much to take on that at some point I actually had to keep my phone on silent because it was just constant pain. at the same time, I couldn't say no. I couldn't ignore it. So you just have to take a day at a time. I don't think I did distress at that point, because you work on adrenaline, and then you realize that you're actually burning out. I remember saying to my husband, and I said, you know, if I didn't have children, I would be there. I would have gone there and helped there. And as strange as it sounds, you know, you it's the country where there's war raging, but you actually want to go there right in the middle of it, because it's your home.
What is your wish for Ukraine or the people of Ukraine?
Victory. That's all you want, victory and peace. I just want it to end. Every day you wake up and you think, you know, I wish this was the day when we hear that's the end of it.
Jim Quinn is ex-forces and a member of Manx Support for Ukraine. Together, they've dispatched supplies and vehicles to Ukrainians. He also provides support to an orphanage that acts as a hospital to kids with special needs in Lviv in western Ukraine. Mr. Quinn recently received a letter of gratitude from a commander in Ukraine for his work.
It's been a long, arduous task, but the thing about it is it's the rewards that you see when... for instance, the orphanage, when you see the smile on the kids' faces, the vehicles that we send out, when we find out how they've helped and where they've helped, that's very, very rewarding and it's humbling.
What made you throw your hat in? What made you start volunteering, giving your time?
I can remember sitting watching the news on the 24th of February last year, and I seen all the dads saying goodbye to the kids, the wives at the train stations and things like that. I could relate to that in some sort of way, being ex-forces myself. I deployed away from my family, left them behind, but the main thing was I always knew that my family were going to be safe back in the UK or in Germany, where I lived for a short time. I knew where my house was, I knew where my belongings were, and I thought, these guys don't know where their family are going to be, that they're displaced, they might be going to different countries, they've got no means of contacting them, especially in the early stages of the conflict. That's where I came from. So I was sitting having my tea, and I just came over with emotions, and I thought, I need to do something. So I started a Just Giving page, and people started throwing money into the Just Giving page, which enabled me to buy things, send vehicles, kits, warm clothing, food, tourniquets, medical kits, and then the donations started coming in of physical equipment. Through myself and other people like Barry Quillian from Q Stores, he was a collection point for it. And then when we built up a certain amount, we were in contact with other people who wanted to go out to Ukraine, and we loaded up the vans and sent the vans out. We had a vehicle kindly donated to us by the use of it for the first trip out from Mokrists. And we packed that vehicle up. Three of the guys went out, they drove out there, dropped a kit off, and then came back to the island again. I think it was round about a 4-day journey for them.
A year later, did you picture that you'd still be doing it?
No. I thought it was going to be over and done with within a month or two. But the resilience of the Ukrainian military and the people, and people who have stood up from other professions. I've been told about a beautician who's now a medic on the front line. She's no longer a beautician anymore, doing nails and things like that. She is now saving lives on the front line. I know the aftermath of it is not going to be sorted out within months, weeks. It's going to be years.
Will you continue?
I will continue for as long as it lasts. I will continue to do whatever is required.
Peter Sugden, a Manx resident and officer in the Merchant Navy, traveled to Ukraine the moment news broke of the war. He was there to give aid and also help people get out. He arrived just after former NATO training base Yavoriv was hit with missiles. Together, he and a friend Mike helped 24 family units, as well as a group of journalists, cross the border into Poland.
a friend called me from Guatemala. She had a friend who was actually in Ukraine, in Poland, and he'd gone out there to deliver aid, and he was basically swamped with the situation. She knew I was on leave and asked if I wanted to go out and help him out. I said, no problem at all. And at the same time, I was in touch with Nick. We served together in Northern Ireland, so we set off. We packed the van up in the Isle of Man, drove it to the UK, picked Nick up. We loaded the van with medical supplies initially and pet food that had been kindly donated to us, and we set off. And that was the start. We didn't really know what we were going to do. All we knew is both of us had been through several conflicts between us: Iraq, Gulf War, Afghanistan, Northern Ireland. We know that in every circumstance, we know who the people are that suffer, and that's the civilian population. And if we could do anything, we weren't sure what we could do. We'd get there and we'd try. There was a refugee centre at Shemesh that we thought that would be the first port of call to find out what was going on and what was being organised. When we got there, it was just chaos. It was at least a 5-hour wait to get through the border. And surprisingly, it was very easy. To get through into Ukraine, it was very easy. Getting out was a different matter for the 1.5 million that were waiting. And we managed to drop quite a lot of aid just really by carrying it. So we went back, we resupplied. We brought the van back to the border. We stocked up again and said, you know what, Nick? Let's go to the supermarket. Let's get some supermarket trolleys. We'll fill everything up we can that we need, because at the border side, they were telling us what they needed immediately, which was great. So we could buy to order. We'd fill the shopping carts up and we'd physically push them over the border. As we were going through, obviously the same people are still waiting to get through the border, bearing in mind it's only women and children that can leave. Before I left, I'd been in Douglas and I'd been to Millett's to buy some cold weather gear, and I'd explained to him where I was going. And when I went to pay, there was two boxes of hand warmers that you put on the counter, and he said, please take those with you and give them to the kids. Our pockets were absolutely filled with hand warmers, and we literally were giving them out like confetti, you know. And I like to think that that might have brought some comfort to some kids there. Certainly it might have even, you know, kept some kids alive. So on the way back, we come up with an idea where there was people struggling making their way to the border. So with the aid of Google Translate, we'd stop them, we'd explain who we were, where we were from, and that this empty shopping trolley was going back to the border, and if they were to put everything in there and come with us, we can get them through the border quicker. We would put pets in there, their baggage. We even had children in there, and we'd just push them back. By that time, we knew where they wanted to go. We knew which buses were going where. We could get them straight on whatever bus, and they were through. And of course, there's only one cashier on a Sunday, and a massive line built up behind us. So when I went to pay, I put my card in, and the girl on the till said, oh, take your card out. And at the same time, an old man was pushing his way through, and he was shouting something. And she said, this man has a lot of points on his card, and he wants to bring your total down. Now, this guy was a Polish pensioner. I don't believe that he had a great deal of money, but he really wanted to help in the only way he could.
Krasimir Pankovsky, a Ukrainian living on the Isle of Man, was in Bulgaria when it all started. He called family and friends to ensure they were safe, then set off to the border to help.
Me and friends of mine, we drove from Bulgaria to the Ukrainian border and stayed there for 4 or 5 days. We helped refugees, and then we took some of those refugees in 3 cars and 1 van to Bulgaria. And my wife then started organizing synchronization between the volunteers that wanted to host people coming to Bulgaria and the actual refugees. But the first few days, I literally stayed there at the border. And the moment I arrived there, I remember me crying for probably 1 hour just by seeing all those people. And they were literally only women and children that were, you know, leaving the country. We have a group of people that are volunteering, not only Ukrainians, a lot of local people are helping. One of the people that you talked to was Jim Queen. I mean, this person is a machine. He's you know, biggest heart ever. So a few other people, local people, so many actually local people that helped and joined us and raised funds. So definitely it's not just me.
Nadia Hadzitska and Yuri Hadzitsky luckily escaped Budjansk, a port city in the Zaporizhia region beside Mariupol. They've been activists against the war since 2014 and refused to leave their home until the very last minute While they've settled in on the islands, they have hopes to one day return back.
24th, on 24th, she woke up at night because she heard the bombing, and she understood that immediately, that it is the war. We didn't believe that it will happen, but it did. 3 days before the invasion, kids were calling abroad, telling them that please go away because, you know, it's dangerous for you. They decided to stay. They decided that they will stay with Ukraine. They don't want to leave. They will stay until and see what's going to happen, you know. The fear came later when you can't change anything, when you talk to these guys and everything, and you understand that whatever you do, whatever you tell them, it's just useless. Like, you feel powerless. And the fear came just later when they thought receiving videos on the local radios and video and televisions and everything and newspapers. There were some videos sent to Russia for their propaganda, where local activists, their friends, were actually tortured to say things they would never ever say in their lives. And my parents knew these people in person. They were friends, and they knew that this person, like, if people like this who went through war, tortured for a couple of weeks, and you understand what they could have possibly gone through in order to say things that they would, like, they would better be killed than say that. The feel was that the soldiers could understand. She could somehow change their mind. And we thought we can talk to them. It came later when we understood there is nothing you can talk to them anymore. They're just like machines. There is nothing to talk to. One of the Russian soldiers, when she was talking to them, look at my eyes, how my eyes are different from your mom's eyes. Why you came here to kill me? What for? The soldier, he grabbed her and said, women, just go from here. Escape from here, because until we are here, you are actually still alive. After us, the forces that are gonna be killing you all. That soldier already knew that after him coming forces to kill them all. Dad just looked at her and said, are we leaving? And she said, yeah. But it actually was very difficult to pack. Like, the most difficult was actually to look around your house, which belongs to your parents and everything, like, to look around, and you understand that you're going to run under very difficult circumstances. That will be shots, bombs. You need to be very light, and you have to decide what to take, and that's the most difficult thing. But nobody knew how to go, where is safe, where is the roads that are still, you can still use. They were informed, you know, by Russians that if we see the phone, we kill. If you stop without permission, we kill you. If you know, like, there were certain things that you couldn't do because you would be just shot and killed immediately. There were 8 cars, 8 families. They were trying to get out, and they didn't know how. The entire roads are mines, so you would be a danger. So you need to go. You go this road, then you turn left, then you turn right, then you go through. It was really complicated, but they all knew the same road. The problem is, who goes first? Like, they didn't want to risk their families. No one wanted, of course. And they saw a car from Red Cross, a volunteer. So he knew that road already. He passed it several times. So he said, like, just go after us. Oh, my body is here, but my heart, my soul in Ukraine.
She's saying that they don't know how things will go, and they believe Ukraine will win. They were in Ukraine, and they were with Ukraine when their territory was Ukraine. And of course, when it be back Ukraine again, they think it's there. They will definitely go back because they feel it as the course, as their course to come back and build hope.
Тому Україні перемоги, перемоги і перемоги.
Of course, victory. Victory to Ukrainians, victory to Ukraine, victory to the whole world.
And so the Ukrainian people said, we are not slaves of the Russian Kreml. Our president in British Parliament said, good will win, evil will lose. We believe together him.
I'm very thank you very much for Isle of Man, for support Ukraine. It's very important. People is friendly to Ukraine. She just wanted to say it's very important for Ukrainians, of course, you know, the support that Great Britain and monks gives to Ukrainians. Like everything they saw until now, they just very touched, and they would like to use this opportunity to actually thank all monks people and the government, and because it's really amazing. We just don't know even how to thank. The support is actually for Ukrainians now is like a medicine. Thank you guys.
Max Astley is a Manx resident that left Ukraine a week and a half before the first missile struck. He is currently in Ukraine delivering aid to the soldiers and people there.
I think it was about 3 or 4 a.m. and I saw videos of helicopters going into Kharkiv, and I called my girlfriend straight away and told her that it happened. She went to her mum's bedroom and woke her up and told her her sister didn't have a passport. So that was a bit like, okay, what the hell do we do now? We're not going to be able to leave the country, because her family didn't want to go. She was the one that wanted to go, but she couldn't. She was in a difficult position. How could she just say, I'm going without you? And that's what they had to do to the extended family members. And my girlfriend, without much driving experience in a big Peugeot, drove to the border and waited 3 days.
Drew Boyd is an Onkin resident that worked as a teacher in Kyiv. A day before the invasion started, he left for London. He was with two Ukrainian friends when the news broke.
Every road junction was fortified. There were anti-tank barriers everywhere. A lot of soldiers around, obviously. Fewer people in the city. But life was going on. Just getting to Ukraine now is such a long process. You have to go to the Polish border and then it's 20 hours on a bus. Now in Kyiv, you have these constant air raids. For example, on New Year's Eve, there was an air raid at 12:30, an air raid at 2:30, and another one at 5. You'll have electricity for 2 hours at this time. Then you won't have electricity for 4 or 5 hours. The city of Bucha now, I mean, it's associated with atrocity and people disappearing, and it's only a few miles. It's like, say, for me, it's like going to Laxey, and it's where a lot of my friends and students live. When I went there in August, for example, I thought it was important to go to Bucha and have a look. And now if you go to Irpin, you can see like the classic scenery of war, like destroyed apartment buildings and things like that. When you go to Bucha, you don't see that. You see evidence of the war, but what you see there is evidence of occupation, which is slightly different. You see areas of disturbed ground with police state around them where they've exhumed bodies. Over 500 people were murdered there. When you go to Ukraine now, nobody talks of peace. Westerners talk of peace, but Ukrainians want their country back. Westerners talk of, you know, you've got to give up territory. But every Ukrainian knows that when you give up territory, you're giving up people. What's happened to the people of Mariupol? What's happened to the people of Severodonetsk? The Western media, the world media is not allowed in those places, right? So what's happening there? Ukrainians kind of know. Things get smuggled out, but it doesn't go on your TV and stuff because basically it's too disturbing. If you're a Ukrainian, your experience of war, like granny's experience war, they've experienced occupation, Soviet occupation, Nazi occupation, other occupations. It's a country that's always been occupied but kept its identity. You know, in 1991, when they had their referendum, like 93% of Ukrainians voted for independence. Despite all the occupation in their history, they kept their identity. The word Perimoha, it means victory. Wish Ukrainians victory, not peace, victory. Because they're the victims of a crime. What you have to remember is that Ukraine, it voted for independence. But then in 1994, Ukraine chose the path of peace. They gave up 1,700 nuclear warheads in return for a guarantee of their security. So when you hear that Ukraine has been given aid, this is us repaying the debt of their decision to become a neutral country.
Thank you for listening, and as the island marked 1 minute of silence earlier, we'll bring this program to a close in a similar fashion.
Переможе Україна, переможе весь світ.
Слава Україні.
Слава Україні.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.